Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. This is where Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi bring you the latest news and information on pro wrestling and MMA, as well as interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap with your hosts, Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi.
Yeah, it's Thursday, Wednesday, it's Ringside Wrap. Hell, it is Wednesday, right? It's Ringside Wrap, and the Three Stooges are back again. I got to tell you, things are really starting to ramp up around here. You notice the anytime the AJC is actually covering a wrestling story, something, either somebody's murdered somebody or somebody's been arrested for drugs, or it must mean WrestleMania. So luckily it's the latter. And it's finally here after, 14 months of build since the initial announcement it was going to be here. It's been fun watching Raw each week and watching how things have played out. And, well, we're going to be talking a little bit about that here in the top half of the hour. And then at about 8:30, we're going to switch over and get Christopher Daniels on the phone. We're going to have him here with us to talk a little bit about the Ring of Honor events taking place this weekend in Atlanta. And what he's up to, and a little bit about his career and whatnot, and then get into a little MMA talk. And I'm sure there's some other wrestling stuff out there, like those guys that broadcast every Thursday night. Mike, how you doing tonight?
I have no complaints whatsoever. Although I'm not so happy, I'm going to play the trombone.
Is that not the goofiest thing you've ever seen in your life?
See, if you're going to do that kind of dumb thing, then do it at WrestleMania. But, you know what, I'll be honest, that goofiness aside, Monday night, I really was happy with Monday night. So, you know, got the thing I hated out of the way early, and the rest of it I thought was actually really good.
Yeah, it has been a great build-up. Of course, we've talked in recent weeks about the fact that it just kind of, you know, it feels like they're having to rely on bringing people back to make this thing special. But I think in a way, although I think they are kind of leaning on those guys a little bit, I think Cena and Miz, I think they've done a pretty damn good job, at least in building up what looks like it's either going to be Rock getting involved in the match, or, hell, it may be a full-blown three-way by the time Sunday gets here.
Well, I'd hope not. That was the one thing on Wrestling Observer Live on Sunday. You know, we put it up for emails on the predictions on who they thought would win and everything. And I swear, almost, it wasn't everybody, but it was close to almost everyone that wrote in. And I know it's a different fan base that listens to WOL that would, you know, necessarily listen to this show or listen to the Meltzer and Brian shows on the site for paid members. With that said, it was like the Rock can win. And what about this swerve with the Rock? Everybody came out of it with the Rock holding the title. Wouldn't that be a great idea? And it's like, Jesus, even if you're planning on this for SummerSlam, which in a way it looks, you know, as good as ever that could happen, even though, no, actually, it can't happen because of the movie schedule and everything else. I mean, they've backed themselves into a corner that way. I mean, from the time Rock has been on, it has been people don't want him to go or don't think he's going to go, which is even worse because they'll be really disappointed.
And Les, what do you think about The Rock, and is it going to turn into a three-way?
I hope not. I don't.
I'm with
him. He's not steady. He's not going to be there. He's not going to be there a weekly. He's not going to be on the roster. He's not going back to wrestling full time. So there's enough celebrity involvement in that respect. But I see him. You know, I think he's going to be physical at some point. But I don't see the three way. It just don't work for me, and it shouldn't work for anybody else. But of course, there's a couple meaningful things on this show Sunday, but then there's a lot of, PR BS too, Snooki and that whole thing. And, it's hard to say how their mind is set. You know, If we were talking about wrestling, I'd say absolutely not. But we're not. We're not talking about wrestling.
You know, the only way I could see, now they've already kind of seeded that The Rock and Cena Miz is going to go on last, which means, okay, The Rock's probably going to rock bottom Cena's revenge for Monday night. And if they were going to do something where they would put the title on The Rock, they would probably do it early to get it out to the media, because they seem to like putting it in a position at, I forget about what time it is. I actually have it written down every year, where it seems to be the thing that they would want to crank out to the media every year and put up on Extra and to the TV stations and things like that. And if you're going to do that, you would have that on, and then Undertaker, to me, Undertaker, Triple H should still go last anyway, but I understand why it's not going to. But, you know, that's...
You do? Why? Tell me.
Why it's not going to go last? Because of Rock.
Yeah.
Because The Rock hosting the entire show, it'll ebb and it'll flow. It'll go all the way to the end, and then you get probably The Rock either hand-in-hand with Cena, which I would doubt, or Rock bottoming him, which, again, leads to his own problems down the line.
I don't have a clue about Mark's health, about Taker's health, but that match needs to go last.
It should?
It's called respect. It's called... tenure, it's called whatever the hell you want to call it, but that match needs to go last. And I don't know what you're smoking, but I'd like a pound, because I don't see, if you, again, unless you're just planning on being variety show entertainment, if you put that belt on Rock,
they're not going to put it on Rock. But if Taker and Triple H wanted to be in the main event, or wanted to go on last, they would. I think they should, but they would. So obviously they're ceding it to The Rock too, to whatever's going to happen at the end.
But I don't think Cena and Miz can follow them. I really do not. I think that's been verbally proven week for the last few weeks that they can't. It can't be done. I'm not saying it won't be done. I'm saying it doesn't make. It doesn't make good sense when you look at the players and what they bring to the table. Rock's going to drop Cena, and he should. If it were me, I saw Cena's heel turn Monday night, as it should have been. I also saw that, as serious as he may try to be, his passion and his intensity can't match Dwayne's, won't match Dwayne's. And when I say that, I like John. I think John earns every penny he makes, but all they've done is put him in the category below Austin and Rock and Lawler and Taker and Helmsley and it's the veterans and the kids, and that's the separation. And yes, I know my age, and yes, I also know my experience and my background, and it doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't, because they cannot follow. I mean, they can give you some cheap pops, but if they're just going out there and, Miz and Cena cannot have the match that Helmsley and Taker are going to have, period, end of story.
Brian,
we've got an hour and 55 more minutes. We can discuss it if you want, but my answer at the end of the hour and 55 minutes is going to be the same as it is right now.
Brian, I talked about a little on Sunday where he said, I was like, you know, you can have The Rock and The Miz and Cena on and then still have Triple H and Undertaker close. And, he brought up Rock Hogan in Toronto. I was like, well, that was also Rock Hogan. And that was a completely separate, different deal. That was just a freakish thing in a city that they should have expected that was actually going to happen. So that's what happened. And with that said, too, it's just like you're telling me Triple H and The Undertaker wouldn't be able to close that show no matter what happens on it? I would roll the dice that yes, they could. So,
well, I was in Toronto, and nobody expected that. I sat in a box with wrestling people, and nobody expected that.
In a million on that. I mean, that could not have been any better.
As far as the
whole thing and the looks go and everything, to me, it was a completely different situation. Now, Les, I want to ask you this. Because of the way it was played on Monday and everything, I mean, obviously The Undertaker won't be wrestling much this year. We've heard Triple H questionable on how much he's going to be around as far as what his duties would be if he's not out there on a regular basis. Could this possibly be leading down towards SummerSlam or something like that, where they actually do the idea of not streak versus career, but maybe some sort of career stipulation for Triple H or something like that, where, because it hasn't been, that's the thing that got me when they were talking about the possibility of this being career versus streak. It's like, no, he came back too late. It's not, you're not going to get your money's worth out of it. Do you think this thing could actually continue for Summer?
It could, I guess, but I'd rather it didn't. I think this should finalize it. I honestly do, unless you're bringing it back at WrestleMania next year, and I don't think that. I honestly don't think that Taker will be doing anything next year. Maybe I shouldn't. I mean, that's just, you know, I have no foundation for that. I just get the feeling that, and I hope like hell he goes out with the streak intact. I think public relations-wise within the company, I think public relations lies within the industry. Hunter could do nothing but harm himself by beating Mark. I honestly don't think he would do that. I really don't. I think you know, again, what I think is when those guys are gone, I'll be watching Justified and reruns of Dancing with the Stars, because the kids can't cut it, baby. I'm sorry. They can't. You know what? And you put all the young boys on this freaking telephone you want, and I'll argue the point. I mean, it's watch it. Take the last 3 or 4 weeks and watch it over and over again, and you tell me who carries those shows. And now you can tell me somebody flippity-flopped more than somebody else, but I'm talking about who legitimately drew your attention to that television screen, who legitimately made you interested to go past that particular point that you were watching at that point in time. And it would be Lawler, Taker, Helmsley, Austin, Rock. And yes, they had a cast of characters with them, but those are the five guys that carried, and Michaels, I should add six, because he was important Monday night, and those are the six people that carried the ball, my friends.
And everything
that those
guys
have, you don't like that, that's the facts of life.
But everything those guys have in common is they won't be around much, if at all, after Raw. After
right.
The Raw following WrestleMania, which is a scary proposition.
It is. And Sin Cara is not going to make a smidgen of difference, nor is the other Mexican whose name I can never remember. I don't think he and Edge, I don't think that's, and I like Edge, you know, I really do. But I don't think that's going to make a big importance on this thing either. I think Cole has been given too much leeway. Not necessarily this past Monday, but the Monday before they let him go too long, and I mentioned that last week. But I think it's all built around these guys. And that's not to say there's no talent there, but you've got to let these younger guys find their footing, find their own center, and let them and find out what they have, if anything, without you putting words in their mouth and taking their arms and legs and moving them like puppets, because that's what these six people that I just mentioned have. They actually learned to perform without, you know, on their own and by feel, not by written numbers and scripts. So that's the difference, boys. And past that, I don't. Like I said, Justified's renewed for a third season. I'm good to go. And then on the other side of the ledger, we can get hypnotized if you want. We can go down to Orlando and be hypnotized by what's-her-face there, Winter.
I think I've been hypnotized enough by Winter this year. I'm ready for that to be over.
Well, the only way that's ever going to be over, I think, is they close their doors, and I'd hate to think that happened for the people. You know, I guess we'll talk about that a little while too. But I just Mania to me is Taker, Helmsley. I'm interested. The Lawler thing can't go long. if it does, it's going to be worse than, it's going to be a bigger cartoon than Brett and Vince on the beatdown, which was overdone.
One thing I wanted to talk about while you're talking about Lawler and Cole, one thing I wanted to talk about tonight is where do they go from here? I mean, hopefully this thing ends, but where do they go in terms of TV and direction in terms
of
those?
Well, the only thing I can see is Cole becomes a mouthpiece for somebody. I don't see much of a future with him for that because he's not polished. You know, I mean, he is what he is, but yes, I know how long he's been around the wrestling business, but he hasn't been a manager. You know, it's just not the same. But do you move him to another show? Do you make him a manager? I don't see him sitting in that stupid plastic box.
The dunk tank?
yes. I don't see him sitting in there the rest of his career, as long as Lawler stays on the show. And again, if they pull the trigger and all of a sudden forget 2 months down the road that these guys hated each other and so on and have them sitting there being buddies again, if you expect me to give you a plus for that, I won't. I mean, shit, somebody's got to cross their T's and dot their I's. It's just, you know what, the whole Snooki thing, it was obviously that she was inebriated, but it was even more obvious to me as
which time?
How many times have you heard me say cross your T's and dot your I's? When was the last time your girlfriend wore her workout gloves to a bar? You know what? It is funny, but it's sad. And when it's sad for me because I spent 50 friggin' years in this fucking business. Excuse my French, but I'm pissed. You know? And it's funny when you've never taken a bump. And I don't mean that to insult either one of you, but it's not funny if you've taken a bump. Because it's, you know, if there was ever a smidgen, a thread of any credit, that the fact that this actually might be something that, you know, there's some real heat in, they killed it in that segment. It was stupid. It was a work from the get. You know, because I'm sure that Lay Cool sat wherever the hell Lay Cool lives and thought, well, you know, let's fly up to New Jersey tonight because those two will be in one of the 10,000 bars in that state. We'll just cruise them all and find them. Hey, that's a clever idea. You know, I mean, there's no logic, no rhyme. It's crap. It's crap. Again, what? And the whole thing with, you know, with Vicky and the mixed match is, I don't know what it is, but it's,
you know, I hate the fact that celebrities get involved with pro wrestling beyond the point. I mean, yeah, I guess the whole thing about the guest host thing they were doing for a while. I mean, you know, that. The novelty, okay, that was fine. They overdid it, but you know, it was fine as a novelty. But when they're getting in the ring, I got a real problem with that. I mean, here's bottom line for me. You guys know how against reality TV I am. I just don't watch reality TV. I didn't even know who the hell Snooki was for a really long time. I kept hearing that name, and I'm like, what the hell? I can't tell you that I've even watched 30 seconds of Jersey Shore. I have no clue what that show is, who's on it, what they're doing. Other than her and the Angelina chick that shows up on TNA, is she really worth the draw? I mean, is she really gonna put them over the top in terms of numbers based on everything else they got going on? Hell no. I think, and I'm with you. I think it is horribly disrespectful to all the people, including the people that are working there now.
Yeah, but, well, you know, what they see is a demographic. What they see is a demographic, and I will admit that I have turned MTV on a couple of times, but I've never sat and watched a whole segment of Jersey Shores, but on a couple of occasions, you know, which truthfully with just nothing better to do, and out of curiosity, I've watched a little bit of it. You know, that's not a demographic that's working. I'm not part of the people they're trying to intrigue with that show anyway. But, you know, I understand what they're trying, but I mean, there's a million things she could do without the whole I'm a wrestler now, you know, and her the one guy from the show trying to pick up Trish, and I mean it's so bad, you know. There should be like a you know how they throw the bleeps up in front of your mouth when you use bad words, and they should be a little sign that they throw across your eyes, bad acting, you know.
that sign's being shown pretty commonly.
Then half of these wrestling shows would be covered with signs saying bad acting. Everybody's, not just theirs, but everybody's. But I mean, it's just that's the other thing too. Does anybody ever stop to think? What people's limit? I mean, I know in legitimate movies they look at people's limitations before they cast them in a role, but they don't bother to do that in our business, and it just makes things not good. I don't know if say worse, you know, but it doesn't do anything for the business. I don't think, you know, it's just it is what it is. It's entertainment, you know. A lot of it doesn't entertain me, but then hell, I'm not the guy that's trying to, you know, just buying pay-per-views and tickets, so or T-shirts or whatever. But
well, that's one of the biggest problems with territories and stuff, and the fact that they're calling themselves, you know, we made fun of it last week. They put on entertainments. Well, in the course of putting on entertainments, I mean, you know, you need more training facilities in different parts of the country. Like, you need a better system as it is anyway, but. You also put on these guys to act, and NXT is not the place to be. It's not for Eli Cottonwood to stand there and talk about mustaches. People never saw that stuff before. Improv groups. You see Jericho and Trish and people like that who have gotten into these things after wrestling, Colt Cabana. But, you know, if you're going to have so much of it in there, well, you know what? I'm sorry. Have Dusty Rhodes take a bunch of these guys and promos over and over again, acting classes, go see improv, go see this stuff. Because obviously it's so important to you, but a lot of times the acting is just really bad. And Rich, too, what you said about Snooki, as far as celebrities go, it didn't seem like she was supposed to be in the mix outside of anything but in the corner at first in this. But they were desperate for any celebrities. They had to get a B celebrity or a C celebrity. I guess right now she's at somewhat B-minus status, I guess. So they went out and got her. But, yeah, I mean, she shouldn't be in this match. She should have been in the corner if she had to have been in the corner.
Here's a lesson for the, you know, I was going over this with somebody earlier today. They were talking about The Rock, the whole thing with Miz and Rock and Cena. And I said, you know, there's an education there, but most people, and when I say most people didn't see it, most people didn't see it. When Cena mentioned that, well, first of all, his intensity never built to the level that I was wanting or would have wanted had I been producing that. You know, he just never got there. He just, bless his heart, he's not serious. I mean, he can't get intense, or at least not as intense as Rock. He can't match him. And Miz is not even in the ballpark. But anyway, Cena had mentioned, you know, first of all, I used the word product, which I hated horribly. It's, you know, that was bad. That took some of the human element out of it, I think. But anyway, he was mentioned that his, you know, his fan, he was for the children and that. And somebody said to me, well, you know, Rock never answered that. And I said, that was the smart part. I said, you got to understand, when you're good at doing something like this, it's knowing what not to do and how far to go, which a lot of these guys don't know, you know. And Rock realized if he answered, if he made a snide remark about that, then some of these adults that were in his corner have children. Mm-hmm. So he would have insulted mom and dad a little bit too. And it wouldn't have been a smart move. So he did the right thing. He said nothing. And it's a good instructional video if you break it down in from business terms. From watching it and being entertained, nah, you probably learn nothing. But you know, but that's the point that every young guy should take away from this thing is he knew when to shut up, he knew when to keep his mouth shut because it was the wrong time to be cool, it was the wrong time to be glib or cutting edge, you know, because it would have hurt him more than it would have helped him.
Well, see, I haven't been real. I was not thrilled with the. And The Rock had to come back as The Rock, but I don't know if you watch back when, in the times he's been on doing his shtick with Cena, you look in that crowd and you see the, you know, the little kids where it's like, okay, now you better make a decision here on either Cena's going to come out of this as a superhero, great revenge, or you're going to lose fans. They wanted to spin the wheel back to try to create some of those fans like they created in the 80s and try to cultivate some of that, and yeah, it had to do with Mattel and the toy deals and stuff like that, but you killed any edge you had on John Cena and made him John Cena. You created a fan base now around him who is now staring up and can't figure out why he's getting crapped on, and that's going to be something they better figure out. If The Rock's not going to be there, and he's not going to be there, he's going to have a movie, you better decide on what you want to do with Cena here, too, and how much, you know, towards gray area you're going to play with your product, too, because you're going to basically burn out these kids as far as being fans before you even get a chance to. So you better, and you still can't hurt Cena, so they're in a fun spot.
I don't know who came up with the ending of that thing, but with Cena dropping Dwayne, I only see one thing there. I only see one thing. I don't, you know, and with the look he gave him when he walked out, I'm thinking, okay, you know, it is, you know, you're a heel. Now, I know somebody there says, well, we, you know, we need to sell purple and yellow T-shirts and caps and stuff, which is more important than actually what the product on television to them. And I understand, I don't believe it, but I don't believe in it, but I understand it. But, you know, he's been the top babyface how many years? Six, probably? Five,
yeah,
6 years now?
Yeah.
Okay. But then, if you turn him, who does he work with?
That's the thing, and that's where, if for no other reason, Orton and, you know, Orton should have never been anything. His only weakness on Randy Orton's character should have ever been when he gets hit in the head, you see him get glassy, and I think they could have played off of that where there's going to be the one weakness on this guy. They brought in wives and all this other stuff, and, you know, fans are reacting to him now, but he's not a white hat. You have to have a white hat. Either if you're not going to have a white hat, then you have to do everything under the guise of athleticism and sport, which, of course, they're not going to do, that they're all vying after the same thing and we cut each other's throats for it. Obviously, that's never going to be the case. So who are your white hats there? You would have basically none because you have Miz. You know, Orton isn't really that guy. CM Punk, who's better, you know, far better, you know, with that mouth and everything than what they give him, because Orton Punk, I thought, has been really good, except for the tour bus crap. But it's like, yeah, who are now the white hats for that company, at least on Raw?
Well, that's it. You know, I don't know. You know, they've been so busy being entertainment. And if you could see my face now, you would know that I'm being facetious. that they haven't been busy establishing people like Taker, Hunter, Rock, Michaels, and Lawler. They haven't been teaching that. They've been teaching how to wave your arms, how to squat and jump up when the pyro goes off, and how to say cute things. And you know, it's pretty obvious, even if you're not a student of this business, that the way they're teaching and what the opposite is not very productive. You know. It's like you're going to end up with you're going to end up with a I'm trying to think of a way to describe it. It's like a class picture that's blurred. No one's going to stand out. It's just going to be a bunch of guys doing big moves and good music and patting hands and sneering and this and that. But they're not really over. You know, that's the bottom line. They're not really over as babyface or heel. You know, as much as Cena has sold the children and a lot of the women, he hasn't sold the majority of the males. And if you stop and think, when Austin was a babyface, Austin was a friggin' babyface. When Rock was a babyface, he was a babyface. It wasn't like there was pockets of people that liked those guys. Everyone liked them. I mean, now I shouldn't say that because we know there are the internet people who boo everybody because that's cool because I've watched two tapes. But seriously, you know, that's the way it is. I mean, the majority, you know, the vast majority of people were behind him, or the same way when, you know, grab your top heels, you know, back over the years. It's the same way. It's not that way now. People just kind of, it's kind of reactionary, you know. If you listen to the WWE crowds, they tend to be more like the Impact Zone. You know, they're programmed to make sounds and do these things for certain guys, and you know,
it's Pavlovian. You know, cheer for the entrance and the music and all that stuff. Yeah, and then when the match starts, it's like, huh? I wonder when the match ends again. I can hear the music again.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's
all right. Well, guys, it's time for us. We need to cheer Les up. We need to cheer Les up. Les is down.
What? Are you going to send me a blank check or what?
Oh, yeah. Mike's going to sign that one for you. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Christopher Daniels right after this.
Hi, this is Joe Elliott from Def Leppard for Rad. Planning on going out and having a party? Great. Have a lot of fun. But do me a big favor and don't blow it. Always choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives. You should too.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
This is President Barack Obama. In the story of America, the greatest chapters are moments of challenge. When we see people serving their country and one another, volunteers who step forward into hospital corridors and church basements, along levees and fire lines, and the next chapter is yours to help write. Sign up to volunteer at usaservice.org. That's usaservice.org. Let's renew America together.
A message from Renew America Together, brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to the GWH Radio Network, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Your show will return momentarily. Did you know that there's more to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com than just Georgia Wrestling History? It's true. Not only can you find documented cards, results, and more on pro wrestling in Georgia dating back to the 19th century, but you can also find out where live and local wrestling may be near you today, and not just in Georgia. We also cover the southeastern regional scene in Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and the Carolinas. You want more? Well, we also cover the major worldwide wrestling and MMA promotions as well, including WWE, UFC, TNA, Strikeforce, Ring of Honor, and more. And so do our radio shows. You can find all of this, and maybe a bit more, by logging on to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we are capturing the legends of yesterday and covering the stars of today. GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say
sweater?
That?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
All right, back on Ringside Rep. We've got our guest on the line, Christopher Daniels. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, I understand belated birthday wishes were here within the last week, right?
Yeah, last Thursday was my birthday. Thanks for remembering. I appreciate it.
All right, man.
You were 29, Chris?
I'm celebrating an anniversary of my 29th birthday, sir, as we all say.
Very good.
You know, Les has been doing that for a while now himself.
Yes, I have. Actually,
darn right. That's the way to go. It's the way to go.
Hey, I've been 29
actually,
for
I'm celebrating
years myself.
Anniversary of my 59th. That's what
I... So, Chris, obviously, big weekend coming up down here in Atlanta. A couple of internet pay-per-views Friday night and Saturday. I know you love Atlanta, obviously. I mean, hell, who doesn't? But when are you actually hitting town, and what are you looking forward to when you get here besides the wrestling?
Well, you know, my friends, I have a lot of friends that live out in the Atlanta area. I'm going to get a chance to hang out after the weekend and just to enjoy some company out there. Actually, a little bit farther south of Atlanta in Gainesville. Oh, the south, right? I got to get my, geography. Is it north? Okay, see? That's why I don't drive to his house. He comes to pick me up because I don't know exactly where it's at. So. Yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to, I think this is going to be a great weekend for Ring of Honor. I'm looking not just forward to my own stuff, but just the overall cards. I think that Ring of Honor is on a roll right now as far as the talent, where the talent is on the card and who's, like, putting out 110% effort. And I'm looking forward to everything, man. I think it's going to be a great two shows.
Absolutely. You know, obviously you and Eddie Edwards going after his newly won world title there. I don't think anybody saw that coming. And I don't think anybody was more excited for Eddie than Eddie was. But, God, what a celebration that was after the match. I loved watching that.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch it live, but I saw the video, and I actually even tweeted about it, where you can see people in 10 rows deep jumping for joy, like literally jumping up and down. And, you know, I feel it's sort of like mixed feelings on my part because I really like Eddie Edwards. I think he's talented as anybody's ever been, and he certainly deserved to be world champion. But, you know, in 2 days, I'm standing across the ring from him going for a belt that I haven't held yet and I want to hold. So I hate to be the guy that ends his dream so quickly, but I think that's going to be what happens.
You know what,
man,
Chris, you've never held the title there, but you've been...
Not the heavyweight champion, or not the world champion.
Right, but you've been part of the glue that held that promotion together in the early years, and now you're kind of in a position where you're the grizzled veteran, even at 29, right?
Yeah, exactly. I feel I've sort of been in this situation for a good number of years where it's very rare that I get in the ring with somebody that's got more experience than me. I'm always, sometimes I'm working guys that are close to my age, but a lot of other times it's really guys. I've had matches in Ring of Honor where the guy that I'm wrestling is 10 years younger than me, is 15 years younger than me. And so that experience certainly comes into play when physically, whether it's speed or strength or you know, the physical aspects where they may outweigh me in that respect, experience certainly comes into play. And I have to wrestle smarter and not harder.
Well, Chris,
let me get you involved in something here we were talking about earlier. And
okay.
You know, you were given the opportunity as you broke in the business and growing into business to kind of to feel your own thing. I mean, to find your own center. In other words, you knew you discovered your own limitations as well as, you know, the strong points, and were able to develop a good personality in the ring and a good physical performance. A lot of these kids aren't given that opportunity with the two big companies. And in that regard, they're still untried and untested, and you don't know if they can be the breakout guy or if they're going to or if not, because they're never given an opportunity to actually be themselves.
Well,
how do you look at that?
I think in my own experience, I think it has a lot to do with never really having a what I would call a home promotion. I mean, they're like where I was trained, I consider a home. I consider Ring of Honor a home. There are parts of TNA that I consider home, but I never really had one place where that's all I did. And so, especially in my early years, I was forced to wrestle in a lot of different promotions against a lot of different guys for a lot of different promoters. And having to do that, I had to be adaptable. And I think that the opposite of that is being in one place and getting familiar with everybody in that one place, and that's your, if that's your universe, you can certainly fall into a rut rather quickly. Having the experience that I've had, it's made me valuable in the sense that you can put me in any situation, big guy, small guy, brawler, flyer. I feel like because I had to get comfortable with myself and my, like you said, my strengths and knowing my limitations, I feel like I can put those into play against anybody you put in front of me.
Right. Well, you know, but by you going to the different promotion like that, that's what I've always said, too. Back in the territory days when I broke in, each time you changed territories, it was like going to a new school. It was the same game.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Played it with a different style, and so you adapted,
sure.
And you also picked up bits and pieces, Les Thatcher became Les Thatcher, Christopher Daniels became Christopher Daniels, and the sad thing, I tell both Mike and Rich, I said, you know, I see some good athletes like in WWE, but I don't know what kind of talent they have because they're not allowed the freedom to find out what you found out or what I found out. That's my point, I guess.
Right. Yeah, and it's a double-edged sword. Like, I understand the mentality of wanting to protect your investment and keep it under a close eye, but at the same time, the possibility of over-sheltering and over-protecting is always there, and it could stagnate growth. It doesn't always stagnate, but at the same time, it doesn't always cultivate. Do you know what I mean? So
very well said,
yeah. It depends on the individual as well. It depends on the individual as well. I mean, you can have a guy who's a tape watcher and who goes out on his own and tries to seek the variety that he may not be getting by being trained in the same place his whole career. You know what I mean? And that
right.
falls onto the guy. I mean, that if that person doesn't have the drive, he's certainly not going to enjoy the success that someone who is a tape watcher or someone who wants to be a student of the game. You know, I feel like those are the ones that you see succeeding are the ones who are students of the game and are learning, whether it's from watching or doing or, you know, studying. That's their job.
Talk about trying to harvest guys. I mean, in Ring of Honor right now, a lot of people, obviously with the fan base, can always be critical of Ring of Honor right now as well. They're losing their TV and everything. But when you look at the roster of you and the world's greatest tag team and guys who have been there a while and had a chance to grow, like the Briscoes and Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards, and now bringing in guys like Mike Bennett, Bob Evans has been around for a while, so I won't use him, but like the Bravado brothers and the guy who's with the Embassy now, who you just want to punch in the face. I mean, you have such a great combination, seemingly from the outside, going on right now with that roster. Now that you're back there and everything, how does that whole group, you know, with new guys coming in and again, new faces with Bob Evans and stuff like that, what is the feel in that locker room? Because there seems to be a lot of excitement, plus a lot of veterans. There's a lot of everything and a little bit of everything in there.
Well, let me first comment on your first part of that had to do with losing our television. I think that, and I said this in the locker room on the last Saturday show, the New York show that we checked, I said it would have been very easy for everybody in that locker room to walk into the building with their head down knowing that our television was ending in a few weeks. But the truth of the matter is, and when it came up, I immediately sort of compared it to when TNA lost Fox Sports Net. You know, we could have easily gotten down on ourselves when that happened in TNA, and we didn't. And it wasn't shortly after that Spike TV came to play. I think the same thing's going to happen for Ring of Honor. I don't know when exactly, but I think that as long as we continue putting the product out that we have, someone's going to want to put it on. And I think these guys like Tommaso Ciampa and Mike Bennett, Michael Elgin, you know, these guys see this opportunity. And one of the beautiful things about Ring of Honor is it's the first opportunity for a lot of guys to have the taste of that spotlight, And these guys are so hungry to make an impact, to make a name, that they're going out there. And it sounds cliche, but they give 110%, and that's what makes Ring of Honor so special to me.
What did you think of facing off against Bennett in Plymouth? Because we had him on, and to be honest, I got to be honest, part of me was thinking, you know what? The run he's been on, he might just take that TV title from you. Ended up not doing it. What was it like working with Mike Bennett right now, who is a kind of a lightning rod right now as far as a different type of Ring of Honor wrestler?
Well, I think that Mike's got a lot of talent. I think he's got a ways to go just because it takes time. You know, there's a point where you learn how to do things, but then the learning comes after you know how is to know when and know why. And that's what I think Mike is now learning on the job. And so a talented performer, and I see great things from him. When I found out that I was defending the belt against him, I absolutely was not sleeping on him. It was not a matter of, it's not a night off. It's not a, you know, it's not a given that I was going to win. I had confidence in myself, but it wasn't a sure thing in any way, shape, or form. You know what I mean? And that's just me respecting Mike Bennett. I know that he's sort of brand new, but you never take an opponent like that lightly at all. The minute you do that, you've just opened yourself up for a loss. So.
And then April 2nd, actually, you face off against Michael Elgin, who's been around for at least a little bit. You know, fans have known him probably a little bit more than Bennett for a little while now, but kind of coming up in Ring of Honor right now with Truth Martini. You got the 9 title match there. What's your opinion on Michael Elgin right now, as well as Truth Martini, actually, too, who was, there's not many managers in pro wrestling, unfortunately, anymore, and he's one that seems to be all over the place and has got no problem doing it. So what's your opinion on Elgin and Martini, too?
I think that Elgin is very talented. I've known him for a long time. I've seen him sort of grow. Like, I met him in the Detroit area a long time ago, and I've seen a lot of growth in what he's doing now versus the way he was a couple of years back when I saw him. And, having just wrestled him in Dayton in February, I know for a fact that he's strong and he's very intimidating, man. It's a tough match, and when I have to go up against him again, it's a tall order. And non-title or not, it's still a tall order. And he's the type of guy that's not necessarily looking for a victory. Sometimes he's just looking to punish. And, you go into a ring with a guy with that type of attitude, you have to sort of turn up the defenses a little bit higher than usual just because you never know what to expect, whether he's going to try and, pin you or cripple you.
Now, when you were in Dayton, did Les offer to buy you dinner at all?
Les didn't get to go to Dayton. Les's wife was under the weather.
Yeah, I missed Les this time. Yeah, I
That's
missed
right.
Les Thatcher, but hopefully the next time. I knew that if he was there, he would have offered me easily. I understand. And I would have offered to buy his food
thank
as well.
Thank you, Chris.
So.
Thank you, Chris.
Well,
I have all intentions
so,
of coming
have.
Up, too. But my wife
please
was under
the
weather,
show,
so I didn't
please. Well, I hope she's feeling better.
Well, she is.
Oh, good. Good
she
news.
Knew,
good news.
She knew that you were in the area, so she felt better right away, Chris. let's shift gears here a minute and give the people listening, Chris, a little like when you became a wrestling fan and where you started to train and how you got around to that. Give them a little of your background.
Okay. I grew up in North Carolina, so as a wrestling fan, my influences were the Mid-Atlantic territories, which turned into, the Crockett Promotions, which ended up being World Championship Wrestling. And my earliest memories were Blackjack Mulligan against the Masked Superstars, Ric Flair, the birth of the Four Horsemen, Dusty Rhodes and the Road Warriors, the beginnings of Starrcade, the beginnings of the Great American Bash. So that's what I grew up watching, and that's what I grew up appreciating. It wasn't until, the later 80s where cable became big and USA Network got WWF and CN was playing World Class and AWA. It wasn't until then that I sort of had a wider variety of influences, but I certainly did appreciate all of the pro wrestling that I could watch as a kid. I never actually fell out of being a wrestling fan, but I sort of got away from it in college and got back into it after I moved to Chicago. I moved to Chicago in 1992 and found out about a wrestling school called Windy City Pro Wrestling and decided to give that a shot, really just to say, well, just, you know, I was an actor at the time. I wasn't necessarily, like, breaking through in acting. It was, you know, kind of a slow period in my career at that point. And I decided to give wrestling a try just to say, hey, if I fail, at least I can tell my kids I did it. And it happened to – I happened to sort of take to it easily just because I sort of had a frame of reference for everything I was being taught from growing up watching it. And so I started training in January of 93. By April of 93, I was wrestling my first couple matches, and I got a lot of success in Windy City for about 3 years. Then I moved to California, and after I moved to California, I got involved with not just the East Coast promotions like ECWA and PWF and things like that, but also going overseas and wrestling for Michinoku Pro. All of that sort of happened around the same time, getting into the Super 8 tournament in ECWA, getting to do some Shotgun Saturday Night matches on WWF with Taka Michinoku, and getting sort of on the radar there. That all sort of happened for me right around 96, 7, and 8. That was a lot.
So that,
I'm sorry, that was a lot of stuff. I apologize. A lot of history there.
So tell me this: Do you ever get around the young kids and force them to sit there and watch YouTube clips of the old stuff, or maybe throw in?
The only thing I have on YouTube that I make people watch is a promo that I cut when I was in Puerto Rico in 1995 with my partner Kevin Quinn. We were working for Carlos Colon in the WWC. And all I show them is a promo that I cut just to illustrate how bad my hair was in 1995. I tell people now, like, the best thing that ever happened to me, like, visually was shaving my head. Because the hair I had before I did that can be described as grotesque, ridiculous, just so many bad adjectives you could use to describe my hair. So that's really the only thing I make them watch is, can you believe I had this on my head when I was in wrestling in 1995? So it's really just for comic relief, believe me.
Now, did anyone ever say, man, forget about your hair. Thank God you put on that Curry Man mask to hide your face. That's when you ought to slap somebody around.
No one ever says thank God to hide your face. I think the worst they ever said was, thank God you put the mask on to lighten up, you know, not take yourself so seriously.
How did the Curry Man gimmick come about, Chris? I mean, I know it's a Japanese thing, but, I mean, how did you get hooked up with it?
I did a tour for Michinoku Pro as myself, as a Fallen Angel, and it was a tour. They do a masked man tournament every 4 years. And the tour that I did as myself was the one that was right before that particular tour. So they liked my work from the tour as myself, and they offered me a position on this Masked Man tour. And they said, okay, we're going to give you this character. And I had no idea what it was. I'd never seen the cartoon that Curry Man was based on. This was an idea that Jinsei Shinzaki had. And of the group, like, some of the mask characters were like Tiger Mask and Sasuke and Granon, who are already established in the company. And then some of them were created specifically for that tournament. Other ones were like Jody Fleisch wrestled as Dako-chan. Jody's a standout from Great Britain. There was another guy. His name escapes me right now. But there was another British wrestler whose name escapes me. Who did a gimmick called White Bear. And of the characters that were created for that particular tournament, the only one that sort of caught on was Curry Man. And I wasn't sure how to play it because I wasn't sure what they wanted out of it. If it was supposed to be a comedy character or like a serious character or whatever. So I sort of floundered with it for a while and finally decided, this character has a bowl of food on his head, so I'm just going to do what I want to do and just have fun with it. And that was where the whole idea of dancing to the ring and, you know, writing Eat Me in Japanese on my arm, all the little just fun things that I was doing, I learned to let go of the idea of being a serious wrestler and just go out there and have fun and entertain. And I think that helped me not just, you know, feed my family and make money, but also it helped me as far as like being a performer to understand that, you know, less is more. You don't need to do everything every match. It's just, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of getting the people entertained rather than, you know, going out there and hitting guys as hard as you can.
You know, that's the slogan of this show.
As silly as it may sound, Chris, when you put the mask on, you actually become a little different. I know I've done the mask gimmick just a few short times, but because your face is covered, you loosen up a little bit, I guess is the way to say it.
Yeah, you certainly it's almost like having a little bit of alcohol in you. Your inhibitions are gone away.
Yeah.
But I don't recommend that anybody wrestle with alcohol in their system. I'm just saying, comparatively speaking. So let me put that out there before this all gets misconstrued.
When you first put the mask on, did you feel a little claustrophobic? I did.
That literally was my first experience doing it, and I had to adjust it. There was like mesh over the eyes and mesh over the mouth. And I had trouble breathing in it the first couple of matches I had. But I got used to it pretty quick. I have to say, I did become acclimated to it very quickly. And I respect how difficult it is working on a mask. Like, there are things you just don't understand until you have to do it, like how important facial expressions are. And if there's anybody that doesn't understand that, they should watch Jushin Liger. Because I feel like Jushin Liger, his whole career, he's wrestled under mask, but he still knows how to convey emotion using his hands, using his head movement, things like that. Things that you don't think about because you figure, oh, well, my face will tell the story. And then you take that, you know, that tool away, and how do you compensate? And he learned, and I watched him, and I felt like he was somebody that I could try and emulate and try to figure out, all right, how do I tell the story that I'm feeling when my face is covered?
Yeah,
Chris,
your body language
back,
is so important. So important.
Absolutely.
And Chris, you've gone back recently and done some work with TNA. If you could, just kind of describe the environment, the atmosphere in TNA compared to, say, Ring of Honor.
You'd be surprised, man. It's very family. It feels like a family in the locker room. It sounds cliche, but it's truth. I'm very lucky to be in two locker rooms where I have so many of my friends, so many guys that I've come up with, so many guys that I've struggled with to have this career. So I've been very, and being in a locker room where you've got your friends, supporting you and trying to do something, make a product, it's a great experience. And I welcome every day I get to do it. I don't know how long I'll be able to continue doing TNA and Ring of Honor, but I hope to do both until they drag me out of the building.
All right. Well, Chris, we're gonna wrap up with you starting to get a little bit of a bad connection, but we definitely thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I apologize.
We thank you for joining us tonight, and hope to meet you here in Atlanta this weekend.
Oh, please do. And you guys, please come to the show and enjoy it. And to the fans in Atlanta, to the fans of Ring of Honor, I feel like this is definitely going to be a high point in our company. And for people who've never watched Ring of Honor or never had the opportunity to get the pay-per-views, this is a great starting point. I know that it's a special deal to get both pay-per-views. It's a special price. GoFightLive.tv. Some of the best wrestling in the world. You're going to see it on the first and second.
Agreed. I'll tell you what,
Chris,
I
hope we catch you the next time you're in Dayton. And until then, be safe, and God bless you, my friend. Take care.
Thank you, Les. I appreciate that. I really do. And thank you so much for, you know, over the years, ever since I've met you, you've been nothing but a gentleman to me and very supportive and always had good criticism for me in a good way, not criticism like a Barry, but a criticism like in a helpful way. And I've always appreciated that, Les.
Thank you very much, my friend.
My pleasure.
All right, Chris, have a safe trip heading to Atlanta, and we'll see you this weekend.
All right, guys, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you for coming on.
Take care. Thank you.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Vince Gill for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Real life's not a song. In less than it takes to play my latest hit, someone will be killed or injured in an alcohol-related crash. So next time you're out with someone who's been drinking, don't let them take the wheel. Take the keys instead. Sad stories make great songs, but happy endings make better lives. That's why friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof,
be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
You're listening to the GWH Radio Network, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Your show will return momentarily. Did you know that there's more to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com than just Georgia Wrestling History? It's true. Not only can you find documented cards, results, and more on pro wrestling in Georgia dating back to the 19th century, but you can also find out where live and local wrestling may be near you today, and not just in Georgia. We also cover the southeastern regional scene in Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and the Carolinas. You want more? Well, we also cover the major worldwide wrestling and MMA promotions as well, including WWE, UFC, TNA, Strikeforce, Ring of Honor, and more. And so do our radio shows. You can find all of this, and maybe a bit more, by logging on to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we are capturing the legends of yesterday and covering the stars of today. GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Every day, children are sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
President of the United States of America as the music bumping us out there. Although I'll be honest, if you can shift these PSAs around, I don't want that one leading us in. That's just no fun there, leading us into back into break here or out of break. But I'd like to thank Christopher Daniels for being on, and Rich went to go hide in the corner somewhere. But I actually hope he went to set his DVR for the fact that The Ultimate Fighter is coming on after this show at 10 o'clock on Spike TV. And Les, have you watched the Ultimate Fighter show?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And if they break a door down, I'm going to have to call the boss and tell him they're using the same gimmick. They're starting to follow wrestling.
That's
two doors is enough. The first time I thought it was impulse, and it probably was. The second time, I think it was more for effect.
Yeah, it was, if nothing else, creative editing going on there as far as what happened.
Because a little common sense tells me if the doors come down that easy, before we go to the next Ultimate Fighter, let's reinforce the doors, right?
Yeah.
Put something a little better in there. Yeah, I watch it. I'm going to watch it with Brock, too. Yeah, I've got it on DVR. I set the DVR for it. It'll be interesting. Somebody said to me, I said, well, we're all still learning. But, yeah, sure, he's still learning. But he's got a great wrestling background. They forget that. You know, he's a short-termer as far as UFC, but he's not a short-termer as far as wrestling's concerned.
No, it just, yeah, I mean, an absolute the badass at Minnesota, at junior college then in Minnesota. But, and that's, you know, they did use creative editing the last time around. Obviously, they were building towards George St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck, the rematch to their fight. And there was the famous scene about the male nurse, which it ended up coming out. Somebody spilled the beans that there was some creative editing there. Koscheck was just defending the guy, and it was defending one of the guys on his team. And they basically made him look like an evil heel, which is what he was going for and what they were going for anyway. So, you know, I think there's some in the MMA community that will always forget. Number one, this sport was kind of built on pride. I mean, it was built from Japan where it was an entertainment show. I mean, it killed pro wrestling there. But it was, yes, it was sport, but then you got Fedor against, you know, Zulu Zinho Jr. And, you know, the freak show matchups, but that's what that was about. And this is a TV show. At the end of the day, even though there are guys that they are hoping to cultivate for the future on this program, and there will be some, it is still a TV show, and Brock Lesnar and Dos Santos, I mean, it's like the 24/7 system on HBO, and you're going to see it with Pacquiao and Mosley, or not Mosley. Oh, God, no, it is Mosley. Pacquiao and Mosley coming up with the CBS stuff and with Showtime. It's just, that's what you have to do now to sell an event. It's not just selling the event anymore. It's a lot of things with it. And what's a better lead into that pay-per-view, plus a great TV show for the UFC and for Spike than The Ultimate Fighter? And
you bring up the HBO thing. It was, what's his name? It retired. Mayweather and, damn it.
Oscar. Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah, De La Hoya. Yeah, right. I saw that we were out of town and down to the in-laws and they had HBO on and just picked up that 24/7, you know, just by accident, and it hooked me. Now I wanted to see that. I'm not a boxing fan, but I wanted to see that fight on the strength of watching three episodes of that. You know that, and I couldn't have told you right then who the champion was or who wasn't, but it was the human interest part of it is what made me want to see it, you know, and I think that's, and when I, you know, let me clarify that these guys that do a lot of high flying stuff, you know, they're great athletes, and I admire and respect what they do. It's just not the foundation of this whole thing is professional wrestling, and that's what I was, you know, trying to mention earlier tonight, but you know,
and again, you know, it's a good time for you to say, because talking about, you know, the UFC and stuff like that, and how it basically, again, it comes, a lot of it is the promotion of, this is what wrestling got away from. I mean, granted, there were more people in the pay-per-view universe that had a chance to order Mayweather De La Hoya than ever before. That's true. But it's I don't think it's almost even arguable that every single person that saw 24/7 bought that fight because it did 2.4 million buys. Nobody thought that was going to happen. Nobody thought it would even get close to that.
Well, you know, here's the thing, too, Mike. We're talking, you know, the theme of this thing, I guess, is WrestleMania because it's just a few days away. But the point being that what has hooked us to want to watch WrestleMania is not all these guys beating the hell out of each other. It's the anticipation of that, right? I mean, Taker and Helmsley have done virtually nothing, and they have, I mean, the first confrontation, there wasn't a word spoken, and it was beautiful. I mean, again, two kids just starting out in the business can't get that done because, first of all, you have to be over. You know, and then, again, like Chris said earlier, too, it's not necessarily learning how to do something. It's when to do it, the proper time. That's the difference, you know. And how, you know, it's not so much that I can execute this move. It's when do I execute it? And I think that's the big determining factor that actually hooks people. Yeah. I like you know, when I do camps now, I will tend to use MMA as a reference sometimes in terms of, you know, do you see two of the guys on UFC just run right out and grab a headlock? They circle, they stalk. You know, they're, you know, it makes it more intense for everybody. But, I mean, you're obviously feeling this guy out. You're looking for that first opening. You know, it's, and all those little emotional things play into it so much more heavily than all the big moves, because that's what ties all this together, you know.
No, it's kind of funny, too, and it's not obviously exactly a direct line, but fighters that listen to the crowd, you know, how you had to learn when you went into different crowds and how to, even on the same circuit, to try to figure out different places like different things, and you had to adapt to that, and you know, they're fighters
sure.
that actually listen to the crowd. It's actually a negative
sure.
with a lot of the Japanese
there,
fighters.
They, you know, there were towns in every territory that were easy to get heat in. There were towns that you had to work your butt off, you know. I mean, it's just each crowd was different. And maybe they were no more than 50 miles apart, you know. But there was that big a difference in how they reacted. So, yes, you have to be able to shift gears, which is another thing that, you know, it's like, okay, well, we're going to be in Mike Sempervivi's hometown. Well, okay, he's a heel all the time on television, and we've been selling him as a heel for 2 years, but tonight he's babyface because it's his hometown. Wrong. Wrong. You're not a good heel if that's the case, right? If you're a good heel, you'll do what Punk did on Monday night and turn your hometown away, or, you know, turn them off instead of turning them on. I thought that was well done. We hadn't talked about that. Punk's opening, I thought, was very nice. Didn't you?
Same here. I thought it was great, and I was tweeting. I can't believe I'm actually saying this now. I was on there, and Dave Lagana was on there, and I, you know, it always gets me with Chicago because it's like, man, they seem to be perfect for the show every single time. And I asked him, I was like, what were your favorite cities? Because being a Baltimore guy, you always, you know, Baltimore always had a great reputation for years.
Yeah.
And, he just said Chicago, Chicago, Chicago. And I think, obviously, everybody being on there and being a week before WrestleMania and all that stuff helped. But, God, that was a great crowd.
I forget which pay-per-view it was, but I had a couple of my kids up for we went to the pay-per-view in Chicago, and then we went to Milwaukee on Monday for Raw and SmackDown in Indianapolis on Tuesday. But it was a hot crowd in that building. It was red hot. Of course, the matches were red hot, too. I think the top was that night was Angle and Benoit, where submission was one fall or pin, you know, whatever. I forget what the deal, but they went more than three falls on the thing. But anyway, yeah, it's a hot crowd there. And you got to be able to feel them. You can't sit in the dressing room and anticipate what the crowd's going to react to. You have to be able to shift gears. You have to be able to create.
What was the toughest crowd for you as a big, like, because always East Tennessee was tough. Like, what was the crowd where it was just like, you were the baby face, but you know what? They didn't want to see you. Or how often did that happen where it was just like, you know what, we're going to switch gears here because they hate your guts or for whatever reason just were not on your side?
Well, sometimes. You know, I remember working in an Indian reservation in Arizona, and they were more like the Japanese crowds, and they weren't animated. They weren't loud. They would applaud. I could have taken a Bowie knife out and slit your throat, and they would have applauded, you know? and it was just so, it was so really, you know, it was, I guess you'd say cultural shock, you know, and never having had to work in that environment before, right? I don't even remember who I worked with, but I do remember that crowd vividly because it was the first time that had ever happened. And but they were just very, very respectful, but they just, you know, they didn't boo the heels and cheer the baby faces. To them, it was a performance, and they appreciated, they applauded for what they appreciated, you know.
Do you remember who you worked for that one and when that was?
Yeah, it was Ernie Mohammed, who was ran a promotion. He had an old supermarket, which was his arena, his TV arena, and his offices in Phoenix. And we never worked the old Madison Square Garden there. I was driven by it, but it wasn't being in use when I was out there in '66. Actually, I worked with a guy named Gory Guerrero out there.
Oh, yeah. You know what? He had a pretty good family, from what I heard.
Yeah, he was a nice guy. Yeah, Gory was really a nice guy. I really, really liked him, respected him, you know. And but anyway, yeah, it was. So that's where that happened.
Was Dory Dixon around then?
Huh?
Was Dory Dixon around there at that time too?
No.
Okay.
The assassin. When I was Gordis George Jr. was there. The Assassins: Frank Monty, Don Arnold, Bob Harmon, Tito Montez. Hell, I don't remember everybody, but that was part of the crew.
Now, did you when you went out there on the way back? Did you work in Mid South at all? Because I don't think you did.
Memphis?
Can't remember. Did you work Amarillo?
No, it wasn't Mid South. It was Ghoulish Welsh then.
Well, that's
Are you
yeah,
talking
right.
about Oklahoma? Never worked Oklahoma.
Okay.
No, never did.
San Antonio and out in the
west
of
Texas? Never worked Texas at all. Just
wow.
never got around to it. No, I mean, no, for no particular reason, just never did, you know. I had the opportunity, well, the Funks, you know, had opened the door in Amarillo, but it just never, I don't know why. I mean, it wasn't because I got along with the Senior and Dory and Terry very well. I just never did. You know, in Mid-South, or not Mid-South, but Oklahoma, I never. But I worked Memphis out of Nashville office. That was, in fact, I was in Nashville when Jerry Jarrett first came to work there in the office.
And what was he like, you know, back then as far as, you know, getting into it and everything? I mean, what were the thoughts on Jarrett?
Well, he was, you know, he just came to work, moved back to Nashville and came to work. He was working for a bicycle company. Damn it, I can't think of the name of it now. But anyway, I mean, a manufacturer, not like a store, but a manufacturer. But anyway, he came back to work in the office and do promotion, and then one thing escalated into the other. And from promotion, he decided to referee, and then from referee, he decided he wanted to wrestle, you know. So... yeah, I was there through before he actually started to wrestle, you know, and was there for the whole progress. I went in there in 68, went to Canada from April of, April of 70 to October, then back into Nashville until February of 71 when I went to Tampa. And I never went back in there after that. But, yeah, I worked. Bearcat Brown, whose brother was at the reunion in Mobile, but Bearcat himself passed away. He and Len Rossi were the first interracial tag team in Birmingham, and he and I were the first interracial tag team champions in Memphis. Len was the big star in Birmingham, and both those towns ran on Monday night, so that's the reason for that. Actually, Cat and I were never partners anywhere else because I worked with other, you know, Whitey Caldwell up on the East End, and Bobby Shane for a while in the middle of the state when he was there as a babyface. And so anyway, but that was the deal. Yeah, we. And I won the Chip Barwick Chevrolet tournament in 1969 in Memphis.
And didn't get a Chevrolet out of that deal, did you?
Well, actually, I didn't want it, but I won it. Then, well, no, I had just bought a – well, I don't mean that disrespectfully, but I had just bought a new Pontiac. And yeah. But Hall wanted it. Dennis wanted it, and he was involved in another program. So anyway, it was Corsica Joe and I in the finals.
See, I'll be damned. See, I always think of those contests. I just think of when the story about Austin Idol, the guy gave him a real check that was blank, and he went and filled it out himself for whoever he did that to. I thought those things didn't actually happen.
That was the great Fred Ward. That was the great Fred Ward down in, I believe, Macon. They did that.
Was it? I didn't know.
What
God,
was that
I didn't
he
know
did?
Was there.
What are you talking about, Richard?
Oh, it was either in Macon or Columbus, but it was Fred Ward that Austin Idol did that to. He took a battle royal check and went and cashed it. They literally gave him a check. He went and cashed it. Fred Ward was livid.
I did not know that. I did not know that was Fred Ward. I heard the story, but yeah. That was.
I tell you, we did some. Talk about different turns. We talked about, up in Knoxville, we had a Cadillac tournament. We had a mink coat tournament. Now there's something different. And this is now, I don't know that this ever done anywhere else, ever. It was two nights, Friday and Saturday, in the Knoxville Civic Coliseum. And what the deal was, is every wrestler that was on the card, it was a tournament, and every one of us that was on the card had a box, a big cardboard box, up in the main lobby on tables with entry blanks and pencils. And any woman that bought a ticket and came into that show on Friday night could sign up, fill her out and drop it into the wrestler's box of her choice. And then all the wrestlers went at this Friday night, beginning of the show, went to the ring, and each one of us drew a name out of the box. And that was who we were wrestling for in that two-night tournament. And then she came, whoever's name we drove came to ringside and was introduced. And when we were wrestling in a match, that lady had a seat at ringside, not like a manager, but just inside the security railing and on a chair there. And whoever won the tournament, his lady got the first, and legitimately it was a mink coat.
That's awesome.
And legitimately, it was a mink coat.
It was, because I would never know. And in fact, in this era where mink coats are so looked down upon, what was the cost of a mink coat?
Hell, I don't remember back then, but it wasn't very cheap.
All the
but
guys
then,
going, Jesus
but,
Christ,
but,
pay
but
it
then,
one
but
to
here's,
coat?
But here's the deal, see. He went to the Furrier and got a deal cut, and he got plugged on our show every Saturday. Plus, he had billboards in the Coliseum that both nights. And of course, it was announced that this mink coat comes from I don't remember the name, Herman the Furman or whatever, right? so he got a lot of publicity. He got television spots too, because he not only mentioned it on the show, but we give him a couple spots.
It's got a great way to get women in, and then, the women whose names aren't drawn, it's not like they're going to leave. You paid for the ticket, you're going to watch wrestling, you're going to buy concessions. Yeah, that was what a great idea.
Well, and a lot of the women came with husbands and boyfriends, too. So, a lot of them maybe wouldn't normally come by themselves.
Their husbands
and
their boyfriends?
Well, yeah.
Their husbands and their boyfriends
time.
Together?
Yes. You
talk about wrestling
too.
Matches. Yeah.
Yes, you pervert. I don't know that that's ever been done anywhere else, but I never heard of it being done anywhere else. But, yeah, we did that. I forget what year it was, but, it got over big. But it was Friday night and Saturday night.
See, Rich was just trying to figure out a way there to get in the Christy Hemme reference from last week.
Oh, anyway. Hey, speaking of redheads, and I think we all know by now that I've just got a horrible fetish for redheads, but let me put this out there. Does it make me un-American that I am in love with Anna Chapman, the Russian spy that was deported last year? God bless, man.
Whatever.
I'll keep Anna from dancing
I'd tell
with the
her
stars
anything. I would tell her anything she wanted to know.
Mike, did you see Stars Monday night?
Nah, it's on the DVR. I still got to watch it. I heard Jericho actually did a pretty damn good job.
He stepped up his game, really. He was smoother, his turns, his transitions, and he flowed better. He wasn't as, stiff like a robot, He loosened up.
May
he was
I
more comfortable.
Please? I have received an email from the general manager.
What?
Oh, Rich.
I'm just trying to break in there. I wanted to throw this out there.
I had been behind the scenes telling Mike I wanted him to segue to Dancing with the Stars, because I got to tell you guys, you've actually converted me. I ended up actually having the whole episode of Dancing with the Stars on this week.
Well, cool.
I actually enjoy that now.
Well, you know what? It is good. I mean,
yeah,
and it's
it was
like Hines Ward has got such a great personality, right? And comes across so well. Who would ever thought Kirsten Alley would have been able to bounce around with all the, you know, the excess weight she's carrying, for Christ's sake? I think she'll be in this thing close to the end. You know, I mean, seriously, it's I think that's, and again, it's the element of surprise, right? I mean, because you don't know what to expect, and it's just go ahead.
I'll say this: I'm not a dancer. The funny thing is, everybody seems to think drummers have all this great coordination; they should be able to dance. All the coordination actually sticks with the drums. I've never known a drummer that could dance. But
I've seen you walk. I know you're not coordinated. Okay.
and I know nothing about what I'm watching, but I got to tell you, it's fun, it's interesting, and it's actually pretty damn entertaining. And one thing I noticed about Jericho was the difference between the first week and this week. You really got to. It was my wife, who actually has a dancing background, told me that it was actually a harder dance that he did this week than what he did the first week, when he did not look as good. So I got to just kind of wonder, was it not jitters the first week, and then he really kind of loosened up and just, you know, the light bulb went on?
Well, I think loosened up a little bit, but he was, you know, he probably was a little stiff, never having done, you know, been out in front of a crowd doing that. You know, when I started doing Masters bodybuilding competition, at first I was a little nervous, but then, you know, having worked, I mean, you know, in a bodybuilding show, you're maybe in front of 500-600 people, you know, maybe 1,000 if it's a decent size amateur show. But, you know, having wrestled in front of 15,000 or whatever, you just, you know, at first, you know, my first couple shows, but then, hell, that was one of the places where I scored highest, was in the free posing, you know, the routines you could put together yourself, because I was able to work a crowd. And a lot of the guys, you know, just weren't comfortable with that. So, yeah, I know completely. And it's cool. Well, you know, and all these people have achieved, you know, some degree of stardom in their chosen field, and they're coming into this thing. And it's just amazing to see how their competitiveness kicks in, or how they, you know, they don't improve, for that matter, you know.
Well, let me ask this question, because I'm sorry, I was watching Macchio, and I guess he's running away with it, but he looks like he's been doing this for years. Is there any criteria that these guys cannot have had some sort of
But that's like the skater. You know, they've got, you know, Olympic skaters have got, you know, you might as well say they've got some dance background. Some of the musicians, like, you know, what's her name, Schwarzinger or whatever, she's one of the Pussycat Dolls, Nicole.
Oh,
she was awesome.
Yeah, forget her name.
She was friggin' awesome. I mean, she and the blonde
Stacey.
Kid, what the hell's his name, Mike?
Huff.
Yeah, Huff, yeah. Derek.
Well, is this not kind of like unfair to the people that have no background?
Well, they're you know, but
it's kind of like
when I say they have some training. Well, they, you know, training is maybe just, you know, when they were 12 years old, they took some dance classes. You know,
I mean,
but here's the thing, Rich. Over, and I think Mike will agree. Over a period of years, you can see like some of these like singers, right? You see them dancing all over the stage. You say, well, they could dance, but it's a different thing. This is structured, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, any of us can jump up and down and shake our – we see that every Monday night and Thursday night on wrestling, right? Guys waving their legs and jumping around. So it's not a big deal, but doing it in a structured situation, I think that's the degree of difficulty.
And it's why it's such a good show, too, because you turn it on and you know what it's going to be, but it's different from every year. Like, they had on, the woman with the seven kids, I forget her name, Kate Goslin. Why was she on the show? She's never been an entertainer, not an athlete, nothing outside of it. But she created a good story. And there have been surprises at the end of it, too, where people you don't expect to win, and that, too. But it's how they get there, too, of some of the things you get. It's just, to me, a really good, entertaining, fun TV show. It's just a nice, good TV show with, again, with dumb underlying stories and things throughout the whole thing. Because you think, like, the Disney kids, the kid from last year and the girl they have on this year, again, I mean, obviously it's ABC, it's Disney and everything, but those girls and guys are kind of ringers, too, because of what they're doing and the fact that they have this, you know, their muscles are still growing and they can still do things. You know, Jericho's using muscles dancing he hasn't ever used probably. So I love the package of that show. I think it really is good. And again, the ratings prove it. We admit to watching it. There's a lot of you who would watch that on Monday night. Well, your girlfriend that's not watching wrestling anymore, and you can get drawn into this thing too. And there's a lot of guys that are lying about watching it because it's okay to watch it. It's a damn good TV show.
And if you don't, if you just like women, there's nothing wrong with the women on this show either,
good
right?
Night,
I mean,
no. Good Lord, the outfits that, and you know what? They're dancers. They can wear these outfits.
Sure.
Mean, it's just and the guys too. You know, Jericho, they
yeah, absolutely.
The gimmick with the tear off sleeves and everything.
Well, you know they had that. You know they had that one Superstars contest, and Maxim from Dancing with Stars and his professional, I forget who the girl was, you know, they were partners. They won the damn thing over, there were football players and hockey players and everything on that damn thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, well, I'll tell you what, I don't know about you guys, but I remember bouncing around the discos. You know, I tease it at kids in the gym and I'll say, my cardio in the 70s was in the discos, but, you know, a lot of those dance tracks were 15 minutes long, for Christ's sake. And you get up there and you know, put an hour's worth of on that dance floor, brother. That's conditioning. I mean, it really is.
Now, Rich, see, I was conceived in a Studio 54 bathroom. I'm a product of the 70s. But Rich, were you out there as Beethoven's Fifth was playing the disco version on the lit up floor on Saturday night?
Oh man, come on!
I love that, man. That was fun. It really was. You know, it wasn't about disco sucks. It was, man, it was just a dance to. It wasn't like I thought it was socially redeeming or it was something that's going down in history. I'll tell you what I like for it now, guys, is it's good background music in the gym because it's got that heavy backbeat, you know, and it's up-tempo.
I guarantee if you go and listen to the Saturday Night Fever, just the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever, you can't help but enjoy it.
Right. That, you know what? I still watch that damn movie. I really do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's entertaining.
Yeah,
but, you
know what?
I mean,
you talk about
and
some eye-catching. The opening, the music coming up behind him walking down the street and all you can see is his feet. That's a hell of an opening. I mean, it really is.
You know, the thing is, I mean, you look back at disco. Yeah, we all laugh at disco. But, you know, just like any other period of music, you know, everything's got its good and its bad. And there was some good music in that era.
Well, plus, you know what, punk kind of took over after that and everything, and you know what, I just like women too much. I'd rather dance with a woman than smash around a bunch of dudes.
or dive off the stage, right?
Exactly, yes. I just, no one's going to catch me anyway.
You know,
I saw that
firsthand. You know, Jim Melby. You guys know Jim Melby.
Jim Melby,
yeah.
Yeah,
okay. Well, Jim and I go way back to the WFIA, for God's sakes. But anyway, when he was... You know, he was road manager for Husker Du, you know, Bob Mould's band.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Well, in 85, when I was at the WFIA convention in Kansas City, I flew to Minneapolis. I had business to conduct with Vern, and I stayed over. I was up a couple of days, and Jim and Bob Mould took me to First Avenue, where the Prince movie was filmed.
Yep.
Yeah, that was cool, man. Mitch Ryder and Detroit Wheels were there.
Oh, cool.
And, yeah. But yeah, it was – so anyway, they came to Cincinnati to Bogart's, you know, Husker Du did, and Jim was road manager. Anyway, So I went, you know, went over and met him at the motel, and we went and had dinner, and then I went down to Bogart's and back, you know, backstage with him and everything. And I'd never been to one of them, you know, and watching these kids dive off the stage and stuff, and I thought, Jesus. You know, this is wild, man. But, yeah, that was, yeah, it gets a little frantic, doesn't it? Have you guys been watching Idol? There's some good talent on there this year.
No.
American Idol? Yes. Oh, yeah.
You're not gonna convert me to that. Sorry.
Well, I'm gonna tell you right now. Last week was Motown theme, right? And there's this James Durbin, this kid. He has Alzheimer. What is it?
Don't know.
Syndrome.
I haven't heard
this year. Osweiger's. What the hell? Anyway.
Asperger's syndrome.
Yeah, that's it. Asperger's. That's it. Yes. And but anyway, he closed the show last week with Living for the City and tore it up, Rich. I mean, this kid is good. And there's another kid on there, Jacob Lusk, who is with a gospel background, is Luther Vandross all over again, and or Marvin Gaye, whoever the hell you want him to be. I mean, there's some good guys on there. It really is.
When are they gonna start American Drummer? I'll be there.
I don't know. Buddy Rich.
There you go. May you rest in peace.
Yes. Yes, yes.
All right. Before we digress much farther, anything else we need to hit on this week with
you know what? Yeah,
I've gotten to where I don't want to talk TNA anymore.
I think it's an atrocity that Dave Finley got let go yesterday.
If that's the reason why, and I mean... Okay, he should have maybe cleared it with someone. And I guess for people that have not heard this, apparently it was one of the shows in Illinois. Obviously, Sin Cara debuted, and I don't know if it was Moline or where exactly it was, but the national anthem was played. Towards the end of it, the Miz's music hit, Cheap Heat, but it was, you know, it's not like I have not seen or heard this done before, but apparently... I don't know if it was somebody at the National Guard or how exactly this worked with them being big.
Sponsored by the National Guard.
It was sponsored by the National Guard, which I think a lot of the tours are. If I recall correctly, the one here was as well, too. And so they do a lot with WWE, but you want to slap him on the wrist, that's fine. But when Michael Cole, a week after GLAAD came down on you, to drop the F-bomb on Josh Matthews out of nowhere on Twitter where everyone and millions of people can see it, you can't take it back. Even if you thought it was locker room terminology, the fact that he did it and was on Raw on Monday, and I mean, look, to let Finley go for that because he was the one that would have had last call on letting something like that happen, you want to slap his wrist? Fine. You want to take him, suspend him, do whatever if you feel the need to, fine. But that just seems to me a cheap way to get rid of somebody under the circumstances. Cheap, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand reprimanding him. I could understand making him call the head of the National Guard there or whoever they were dealing with and giving him a personal apology. But, Dave has been... a lot of the glue that's held that whole women's division together, man, for years back, you know, he's worked his butt off for them. Yeah, it's overkill. It's overkill. I mean, it's, my God, that's a shame. I mean, it really is.
But speaking in a positive way of a guy of his generation and background, actually on that April 2nd show in Atlanta, Colt Cabana and Dave Taylor, which I European uppercuts, all night long. Claudio Castagnoli, this has got to be his favorite match to watch.
Wow. Dave was my assistant trainer for a while, but then he couldn't relocate because his wife had a good position with a corporation down in Atlanta. But he was up here with me for a while when I was with WWE, and great guy. Yeah, he's good people.
Well, for those people listening to us that are coming into Atlanta or are in Atlanta, based in Atlanta, and you're heading out to any of the WrestleMania week events or trying to figure out which ones you're going to hit, which ones, what time everything's happening, we've actually got a link on our site now, right there on the front page, the WrestleMania week tour guide.
It's got all the information listed for all the events in chronological order and by date, so you can get all the info. And it's also got phone numbers and links to where you can get more information if you need it. We're going to have a full crew of guys out pretty much all weekend hitting different things, but if you happen to be at something, you want to share your experiences and what you did, shoot us an email at contributions@georgiawrestlinghistory.com. Again, that's contributions, plural, at georgiawrestlinghistory.com. We'll look it over and maybe get it posted for you. I'd love to know what's going on and your perspective of things. Guys, obviously, I guess the big pay-per-view on Sunday night, unfortunately no TV of the Hall of Fame until Monday night. We'll get the, I guess, the really abbreviated version. What, that's going to air for, what, an hour prior to Raw?
Yeah, yeah. I'm up for Never Mind Raw and the Hall of Fame. I mean, I'm obviously going to watch both, but I'm up for Tough Enough. The trailers with Bill and Steve.
Oh, it's looking great.
My interest
great.
There. Yeah.
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 Of course, play, you know, we talked about it. Oh, go ahead.
If they play it that way, you know, across the board, because I think it's important. I think it's important to know what it really takes to get where you want to go. You know, I don't think there's any reason to sugarcoat it. And it sounds like they're not planning to, and I think that's good, you know.
Well, you know, too, we had talked recently about the fact, you know, I guess there's still a lot of unknown, especially I know, Mike, you were still kind of hazy on or unsure of what we know so far about what came out around Deep South and McDonough with Bill DeMott. But I understand there was, I guess, a little more friction this time around, too, where some people were complaining that he's just too hard on them. And, you know, I got to wonder, like, you know, if these guys were around in the days when Les was coming up.
Well, that is true, and I think there's going to be a level of that. And, you know, you have Booker, who you have as an announcer. You have Trish, who everybody loves the pieces. Austin, I'm not sure if how much he is hands-on. You know, obviously they show him in there too, but, I mean, as much as hands-on. So I don't know. Because there's been word of, you know, from there have been people have said until it comes out you're not really sure, but was he yelling at people? Was he being overly dickish about it? There seems to be a line there, or it was actually being hard, and there seems to be people on both sides right now, so I don't know. That's still up in the air, I guess, for right now, but, I mean, for the show itself, somebody had to be the hard ass on there. If that's the – somebody's got to be a hard ass.
Well,
but
you know,
obviously, if
yeah,
he went too far
right.
or did something else with it, we'll find out. But you know, somebody's got to be Bill DeMott on that show because he did it in the second season. I think he was on the second season when you know he was you know yelling at guys. I mean, it has to happen.
I never
well,
had a football
you know
coach
what?
When I was
Nobody's
younger.
Died. Nobody's died from it, and you know it's not hazing. It's to find out what you know, can you deal with the pressure? I mean,
it's like, you know, if you're in the military and, you know, you're friends with your drill instructor, then chances are he's probably not a good drill instructor and you're probably not a good soldier.
Well, and let's be honest. I mean, you look at it and it's done for a reason because look how many people have come out of that show truly. I mean, Nydia was a little bit of a different deal, but most of those guys aren't around anymore. Kenny King is, but he also went to go to work with Bockwinkel and obviously took a different path to get to Ring of Honor. Josh Matthews is an announcer, The Miz, who didn't win anything, and John Morrison. That's it. I mean, for all
well,
of us,
you know, here,
guys,
here's the other thing. Here's the other thing, too. A lot of people with a misconception, you go to those 8 weeks and you're ready to go. That's not, you know, Maven came to – I got Maven after – you know, he won Tough Enough. And then I got Nowinski also, you know, who came later. But with Maven, he was a great kid. He really was. I told Al Snow, I said, you couldn't have picked a better guy, personality-wise, work ethic, just a great kid. But he was still only 8 weeks in, you know. And I know, not to my face, but I know behind, you know, that I was criticized. Well, he doesn't know how to use him. Yes, I knew how to use him. But it wasn't going to be on top because I had guys that were better than he was. And yes, I knew his value. I knew he was, you know, his
big face on TV for a lot of weeks. And we utilized that too, but I wasn't going to put him on top because you couldn't carry the ball there. You know, it's just 8 weeks. So, and the other thing is, you know, here's the deal, guys. It's kind of like going from high school to college to pro in football. You know, that big star in high school who was all state may fizzle in college because he's hit his plateau in high school. Or how many guys are drafted out of college every year in the NFL never to be seen again because they plateaued in college? So, you know, just because you look good for 8 weeks, Nigel, who wasn't an overnight sensation, there was no doubt in my mind he had the passion and the drive. I knew that after a couple months, but did I know how he was going to turn out? Absolutely not, you know, because he didn't develop that fast. Everybody's different, and you know, but you got to find out.
And I should have actually said Taylor Matheny's name too, who had to take go to Japan and have to take a different route. But she was actually, you know, obviously not a big success story coming out of there, but you know, kind of one too. And Nowitzki, who wouldn't have known what would have happened there, and obviously with Matt Capitelli too, it wasn't his fault that they couldn't move on from the show too. Although I guess Nowitzki did, but obviously it wasn't for too long because of the concussion issues.
You know, and Chris, I like Chris too. He was a good kid to be around. He's a sharp guy anyway. Well, he, you know, the concussions and everything, but he was very easy to work. Those, you know, the experience I had with the guys out of Tough Enough, and I, you know, was all positive, really. They you know, I don't know if they came in the door with that attitude, but they walked out the door with that attitude, which is the most important. But, you know, that's like Austin says on the one trailer, go, or he or Bill, I forget who, go out and come back in like you mean it, you know. It's like it's not a game. You know, here, boys, it's a business, you know. Give me 100% of what you got today. You know, it's bring your A game because that's what it's about.
Yeah, you're not going to get
Does that mean every – beg pardon?
Oh, no, sorry, let's go ahead.
No, I said, you know, and everybody is not going to be a Steve Austin or a Rock. There's got to be supporting guys, you know. And there's some guys that's what they're cut out for, you know. And other guys are versatile enough to work top, bottom, and middle, or whatever. It's just, you know, everybody's different, and you got to be able to feel that. You got to be able to feel that.
And you know, the trainers obviously need to understand that you can't hold it against a kid because this is the era we're in, because this is how they may get their break. But what these guys need to know going in, as far as meeting guys like Bill DeMott and Steve Austin, well, you know, you weren't. They're getting a $15 payoff from Jerry Jarrett, eating tuna fish, you know, out of a can and raw potatoes and, you know, starting up in Dallas against Frogman LeBlanc. I mean, that, you know, getting beat up by Jim Duggan as he walks into WCW and being fired by FedEx, that you're not going to have to probably go through that, which means you're not going to draw much sympathy out the guys who, you know, that you're hurt or you're tired or any of that
right.
stuff, which – You know, look, sooner or later it's going to happen on that show, and you know it is, and it's just going to be – there's going to be people that react to it and go, oh, my God, you know, they're actually hurt. Okay, there's a difference between – again, and this is sports too, and this is the something about, you know, this being a reality show and why it worked on MTV, even though I didn't think it would, because people just don't get it. People have never played sports before, and you say, are you hurt or are you injured? Because there's a difference. And that's what the show, if nothing else, the show should be a good talking point, too. And with it air basically bookending Raw most weeks, you know, between 8 and 9, and then afterwards, I think is a really good idea. I think this is going to get a lot of USA eyeballs that are going to get stuck on it because, in the way it looks, it will draw you in. It's just like what you did less on The True Life with Nigel, and just like the first seasons of Tough Enough on MTV. Good TV.
Well, you know, the thing is, too, you're talking about injuries and stuff. You know, there's something I can say very positive. My time with the company, I know I was was considerate and concerned with guys' injuries or hurts or whatever, and JR was too, Jim was too. I mean, I always preferred. Error on the side of holding them out too long, and then a lot of times I let them make the decision. I can't feel it. You can't. You tell me. is not, you know, I don't want you to go out there and hurt yourself, because that's silly, because those are your tools of your trade, you know, and the less amount of operations and sprains and things you need on those parts, the better off you are, you know. I mean, they're your tools. You need to take care of them.
Plus, you might hurt you. You know, knee gives out or you're favoring something, and they could hurt whoever there is they're working with.
Well, sure. Yeah, but, you got to take care of yourself. That's the other thing, too. The whole thing, yes, there's a time if you hurt, like you say, Mike, then maybe the show must go on. If you're really injured, then that machoism is really probably counterproductive, not only for you physically, but probably for the match and for the company, too. You know, because no matter, it's brave and manly that you're out there trying, but if it, brings the match down, well, then you know, that's not a positive either, you know.
Well, guys, what do you got to wrap this week, or plug this week?
Oh, well, you know, I've already done my PW Insider this week because he's down there in Atlanta running around. And then this weekend I got Doc and Will on Observer Figure 4 Network, where I play undercard billing to Mike Sempervivi. Because he's on Sirius Radio.
That's it. We're back on
Sirius
Radio.
He's a major star. Anyway, and let me plug Manchester, where I'll see Rich Tate. May 13, 14, 15, that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Manchester, Georgia. We're doing a weekend camp sponsored by Pro Wrestling Revival.
And, yeah, we did have that link up on the main page at GWA.
That's right. I did see it there. Yes, thank you very much, Richard.
There you go.
Les Thatcher and at Pro Wrestling Revival. And anyway, it's at The Mill is the building in Manchester, Georgia. Brian Long is the promoter. Like all you guys that jump on and come on down and say hello and train with us, you can hook up with Brian at ProWrestlingRevival.com for more information or to sign up or whatever, and looking forward to it.
I can't wait to get down there and train with you, Les.
Well, good. I know you're probably out running laps every morning about 4 a.m., right?
I'm lapping up beer. All right, so Mike, what you got going on?
Say, well, remember to scroll down a little bit from where the Les up top there too. And if you're going to buy the Ring of Honor pay per view this weekend, do it through the GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com website down there and get credit for that, and which we'd appreciate. And then you'll get to actually see some really great wrestling. So nothing wrong with that. But even though we're back on Sirius, I'm not sure if we're doing a show this week this Sunday because, well, Brian Alvarez is down in Atlanta as well. We're going to make the decision here real soon to see what we're going to do about a Sunday show, 6 to 8, on Sirius Channel 125. Ha-ha, take that, Bubba. We're there and you're not. How does that feel? And, of course, the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, which I think Adam and I are going to try to record tomorrow night, Thursday night, actually, to have it up Friday or Saturday, too. So I'll be watching a little bit of All Japan and talking about all the stuff that's been going on over in Japan, and as well as a bunch of other stuff, too, including the UFC Ultimate Fighter, and I'm sure WrestleMania here coming up, and, of course, the hockey playoffs, which the Rangers are trying to work themselves out of.
Had you thought, Mike, that the guy you work with on another network is down in Atlanta, and a guy I work with is down there, you'd think since Rich is already there that he probably would have flown us in and put us up. Would that have made sense, you think?
And then got us all-you-can-eat passes at Abby's Chicken and Ribs. That would have been a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
All right.
Rich Tate just cut his wrist.
All right. Let's see. Once again, I want to remind everybody, if you're traveling in or if you are in Atlanta, go to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, hit the link leading you to the WrestleMania Week Tour Guide right there on the front page. And as Mike said, yeah, anytime you got a Ring of Honor or Dragon Gate internet pay-per-view, you can find that at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
That's right.
Either do that linking through our upcoming event sections or within our news sections. We've always got stuff up. Going to have some banners up here in the next couple of days to make it easier for you to find those. Hope everybody has a safe trip into town. Hope everybody enjoys their experiences. A lot of stuff going on, not just WWE, but the Ring of Honor, the Dragon Gate USA, the Hall of Fame. Don't forget Colt Cabana and Marty DeRosa doing $5 wrestling, basically like a Mystery Science Theater kind of deal over wrestling footage. That's going to be at the Academy Theater. Got to be funny. Anytime you got Colt Cabana involved, it's good stuff.
Hey, and the other guy is really good, too.
Oh, yeah. Marty DeRosa.
He did his routine down at the reunion a couple of years.
Yeah, he's a very funny guy. Of course,
yeah.
Road Warrior Animal going to be Hall of Famer in waiting. Road Warrior Animal going to be doing a couple of book signings in the Atlanta area. Got info on that as well. And let's see, Wrestle Reunion is on Sunday. Starts 9:00 that morning at the downtown Marriott. Of course, Bruno Sammartino in town. Big deal there. So get out and check it out. The art show is going on tonight. Don't forget Kevin Nash has a big party Friday night. And the Atlanta Falcons teamed up with WWE to set up a Pro-Am golf tournament. I believe this is the third year they've done that. Pretty high cost to get involved there. I think there's still a chance you can get in there. We got a phone number there for where you can call and do that. Of course, proceeds go to Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed's Centers of Hope benefit. So, a lot of good stuff going on. If you see anything you like, anything you don't like, whatever you see, shoot us stories of your experiences to contributions at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. We'd love to have it. Big weekend here for us local folks and bringing some nice money into the economy, local economy we could use. I think that's going to do it for us tonight, guys. Got anything else?
Yeah, actually, don't forget about the Twitter, the GWH tweets, and Semper Vivi Twitters, too, when you're out and about in Atlanta as well. And I got to ask you, since you brought up Animal's book, I got to ask you guys, because I'm such a media whore, I've just used this Nook from Barnes & Noble to get magazines and mostly newspapers. Which book should I buy, though, as my very first book? Should it be Road Warrior Animals, or should it be Rawhide Down, the near assassination attempt on President Reagan?
Animal.
Enough said. I'm out of here.
Now, Les, hold on now.
What?
Are you gonna unveil your Twitter account next week?
No, I'm not. I'm not unveiling my Twitter account.
I'm gonna punch Lagana. I'm gonna punch everyone who got me to actually do this, because now I have a bunch of followers that they actually want to hear what I have to say, and it's driving me nuts. I cannot believe I'm actually on Twitter. I thought I held off of this stuff for that long. No Facebook for me, just the Twitter.
Oh,
all right, that's gonna do it for us here this week. We'll talk to you guys next week.
See you next week.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.